The Watson Weekly Podcast is sponsored by Rithm. In commerce, timing is everything. That's where Rithm comes in. We help brands and retailers keep every channel connected, so when the moment comes, you're ready to act, launching faster, adapting quicker, and growing smarter. See how your business can grow at rithm.com. That's RITHUM.com. Welcome to the show, Gareth Cummings. This is the Watson Weekly. Rick Watson, your host. I'm really excited for this conversation. Gareth and I have known each other for some time now. He is a different kind of CEO with actually a different kind of path to the CEO seat with an AI native company called eDesk that was AI before AI was cool. And so I think there's a lot of interesting nuggets and conversations out here for the e-commerce community that they will find interesting. So would love to first welcome Gareth.
Rick, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show. Really excited to chat to you. I said, known you for quite a while, following your content for quite a while. So quite exciting for me now to be part of that content. That's something new and different. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. And, you know, I guess before we get into the last year and a half, which has been like a whirlwind, I think, from all of our perspectives, tell us a little bit about your background and your path to eDesk, and then your path to your current role, and maybe describe that.
Absolutely. So I've worked in tech all my life, really, right from the start. When I was younger, I was always interested in technology, right from the, I think the first computer I started to play around with was a Commodore 64, which is showing my age. But so I've always been interested in tech, and just ended up working in kind of Irish tech startups from near the start of my career. That wasn't on purpose. That was just how I ended up in a couple of jobs. But quickly found I'd like that because not only was I exposed to the technical element of roles, but you know, when you're working in a small startup right. company, right, it's everything, right? Yeah, in terms of be it customer facing, commercial aspects, you know, the whole business. Yeah,
you're the janitor, you're the salesperson.
Yes. Yes. You play any role that is required. But I really enjoyed that. I really liked it. So I kind of progressed through my career and worked in different kind of tech startups, be it worked in kind of banking for a while and then telecommunication, and then the last company I worked for, we got acquired, and I stayed for a little bit after that. And then Ray Nolan, who founded eDesk, new CEO of my last company, and Ray was looking for a CTO. And so we got chatting to Ray, and we hit it off over coffee. Well, I had a tea, he had a coffee. So so he asked me to join as a CTO, and that was about 8 years ago. And took over running the product and technology within eDesk. So that's where I started out in eDesk as such, in terms of looking after the product and tech.
Got it. So, I mean, banking, telecom, AI, I mean, that's a natural progression.
Of course.
How do you think about that?
Of course. It's funny because obviously they're very different, but there's a lot of overlap in terms of the different things you'd be working on. I mean, because in banking, it was around payments that the area I worked on. So again, that was kind of similar in terms of at scale and all the volume and kind of mission critical systems, obviously payments, money, right? It's kind of, you know, we used to joke that if you mess up in payments, you made the papers. So that, you know, that wasn't a good thing. Right. Also, that was, you know, it was still very interesting. And again, you were coming into, you were up against banking, a lot of legacy tech. Like they have a lot of tech debt, a lot of tech, you know, obviously because it's been around so long. I mean, still using mainframe systems and, you know, so this type of stuff. And you're trying to build, you know, modern agile systems on top of this layer. So there's a lot of complexity there, and a lot of challenges, but enjoyable all the same. And then into telecommunication, where again, worked in billing, but the producing of bills as such for a company called Brightbill. And again, that was different in terms you were selling to big operators, like in the US, the likes of Comcast or Sprint or AT&T. So you know, massive, massive, massive companies, you know. We were an Irish company selling into these big entities, but that was fun and interesting. And again, get to see things at scale and similar. A lot of legacy systems and stuff that you're going in trying to improve and build on top of. So you've all those, but you know, you're still trying to do things at scale and automation and stuff. Would have always been at the core of kind of how I would have worked in terms of how you can do things better and smarter and quicker. Because again, when you're working in a smaller company, you know, you're competing even against your competitors. So you have to try and think smarter and how you can do things a little bit differently and how you can do things more economically. That's just the mindset in a startup business. So that over the years, that just kind of seeps into how you work as such, mm-hmm. right? But that's very much the mindset. To talk a little bit about AI and where that goes, but it's kind of a similar pattern because you're looking, those patterns are already there, right? You're ready right. about things and how you can do things smarter and quicker. You know, so that's been in, I guess, my DNA for a long time.
No, I think that's an interesting way to frame it. And I would love to go back to this conversation. I mean, clearly you were invited into eDesk as a CTO, but the difference between a CTO and a CEO is sort of like a massive gulf for the average employee who never has to sit in that chair. Talk to me about that conversation. Were you surprised by it? Were you not surprised about it? Did it develop over time? How did you respond when you were at? Were you asked or did you ask? Like, because I think these sorts of moments are really career defining moments. You know, it's not like something you can do or undo for good and bad. And ultimately, and I kind of felt when I was asked one day and I was like, what do I have to lose was my answer. And so I'm curious at your approach to that.
Yeah. Good question. I think firstly, I didn't set out and go, oh, I want to be CEO. That was never, never how I worked, to be honest. And it would have been similar, even how the path I came right from my career. I guess like a big part of how I would operate is just maybe fix some problems. You know, that would be a big thing in my DNA. So obviously came in product tech and was things to fix and solve. And that just evolved over time. And again, because I always worked in smaller businesses, I always would have been quite commercially aware, customer facing. I would have had some of those traits anyway, or learned those traits. So I think that just over time, as I worked in eDesk, it was more and more that I was involved in different aspects of the business. And I guess that just kept evolving. You know, in some ways, wherever the hardest problems were is where I ended up going towards, if that makes sense, you know? And, you know, over time, as we kind of tech and product got better and better, then it was into, you know, how we can scale or go to market engine. So even before I took on the CEO role, I would have been very much involved with those things. I mean, Ray used to say it was, you know, probably the most commercially aware CTO that you would come across, right? So I guess that kind of, I said, it wasn't a path I set out, but I guess that's where it started to go. So yeah, when Ray turned around, whenever it was, probably was about 15, 16, 17 months ago and said, probably similar to what you said, Rick, you kind of said the fancy, and I said, yeah, okay. Like I said, and I had, obviously it's different when you transition to the role, but because I'd been working in the business so long and I'd been familiar with the business, it felt like a natural thing to do. It did feel like a thing to do, you know? So that was kind of the path. And are there days sometimes when I miss some of the technical stuff? Yes, like because that's still in my heart, if you know what I mean. But it's enjoyable. It is enjoyable. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that's great. I mean, and if we kind of go back over eDesk history, publishing early AI models in 2018, and then kind of the post LLM, ChatGPT, you know, whatever you're going to call it, investments, gold rush, bubble. Some people call it a bubble, a hype cycle. You were shipping conversational AI while everyone else was still arguing about chatbots and things. Now that sort of the world has caught up to it, did the world match what you were building, or did it change expectations of what people expect from the company? Like, how do you characterize what you started doing versus how you think about it now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as you say, we first started to build our AI on the product back in 2018, which seems like a long time ago. And it was, you know, 38 years, you know. And what we built was kind of a domain specific language model. So mm-hmm. we, oh, so the context in we've always, the product has always been built around e-commerce from day one.
Mm-hmm.
eDesk is a platform that's a customer support platform, and it's built, we built it around the order. That would be kind of slightly different than most other customer support platforms. We built around the order, also the platforms we built around the customer. Obviously, we have customer, mm-hmm. but that mm-hmm. was at the core of the product. And, you know, we recognized quite early we had an opportunity in terms of AI, because, you know, when you look at e-commerce generally, when it comes to, you know, there's queries like, where's my order? I need to return this, you know, there's kind of standardized stuff there. And because we were only selling to e-commerce customers, we were able to train that day. So the challenge, there was lots of companies trying stuff back then. The challenge for them somewhat was that they had such a broad data set, whereas we were relatively narrow on e-commerce data set. So we were able to train the main specific language model on that data set. And it worked. Like we trained it, went in the product, built workflows around it. Some of the challenges we actually had around training the data wasn't, we had, you know, it was two things probably. We needed a little bit more of a wider data set. We had the data set that we had, but we needed a wider data set, but also just computational power, like the ability to train and retrain. That took a lot of time and effort and, you know, money as well in terms of training those models, right? Mm-hmm. But what we had was we had the workflows embedded in the product, and we had everything there. The other thing we found as well was there was a lot more resistance to usage amongst our base. Like when we presented this in front of them, like 2018 was not that long ago, but back then it was night and day in terms of AI. Yeah. Like I can have a conversation. My dad is 83 years old. He asks me about AI now, right? Like that,
right?
Like you, it's a conversation topic.
It's a sea change.
Yes, I like
to say in 2018, if you were pushing or talking to customers about using AI, it was like, how can I carve off a little bit that isn't going to get in the way of the customer that I can 100% trust? And now it's almost like the opposite. Really, like, how can I get AI to cover the 80% and then humans cover the 20%? And so I think it's flipped.
It has so flipped. You're so, like, that's exactly what it would be. It would be, can I do this in an isolated fashion? Can I, I'm very nervous about this. I'm, you know, so,
right.
So to be honest, a lot of time was trying to, and it wouldn't be, like, sometimes it wasn't even enough to do it or show them working. They'd be kind of, still not sure. Like,
right.
But now it's like, I want AI to solve this, make my dinner, drive me, you know. Drive me home. Like, solve my life's problem. Right. So it really has, like, completely switched, you know?
Yeah.
And the demand is, yeah. And but the expectations around it as well are, you know? So obviously there's been massive leaps there's LLMs everywhere now, really, right? In terms of, but yep. There's been massive jumps in terms of, but it's so funny how people, you know, people get so used to something that would have been groundbreaking, and then they just, you know, so then, you know, and you know, there's lots of memes and stuff on it. You see it in terms of how people, you know, first is groundbreaking, after 3 months are kind of going, yeah, well, that's what I should do as such, you know? So the expectations keep going up and up in terms of, in terms of what people expect it to do, which sometimes isn't, you know, just that kind of alignment, you know?
Yeah. And I'm interested in the effect, you know, because you're talking about it with respect to your product and what people are asking it to do. But the reality is people are asking this about how to improve their own business, every vendor in their stack, which has created a lot of pressure. Combined with the economy and, you know, inflation and cost of services increasing, it's been a couple of tough years for SaaS when I talk to a lot of founders. Can you broadly, I mean, eDesk has been able to wade through it. I'm interested in hearing some of the trends you've picked up on that are different than what obviously all of us saw during COVID, which was everything always up and to the right. What was the mentality then, and what did the mentality switch what has the mentality switched to? Because I'm not sure it's switched off yet.
Yeah. I think, again, good question. I think in particular in COVID, in SaaS in particular, and it was just grow at all costs. It was kind of like, as long as things are going up, it doesn't matter, right? So that meant, yeah, raise lots of money, hire lots of people. It doesn't matter so much if we're inefficient, or, you know, because and everyone was, you know, everyone was in purchasing mode as well, right? So you know, those same companies that were growing were also buying lots of software, B2B software. So there was a bit of an ecosystem there as well within the SaaS community as such, right? Because you were growing as a company, you were buying all these other SaaS products as well, right? So it was just kind of and you know, I think there was a lot less questions around all those things. I think now it's very different as a SaaS company now, or a B2B SaaS company, or any company. It's a lot more focus on profitability and, you know, what's quality like, and, you know, are you generating cash? And, you know, so there's a lot more focus on those aspects.
Right.
And I think same in e-commerce, right? It's and e-commerce in particular, like margins are tighter, right? It's harder and harder. Customer acquisition costs are going up. Tariffs. You've a lot of pressure on businesses now. So everyone's looking at their margin tighter, which means they're looking at stuff like the software they use, right? And they're kind of going, well, the first question is this, do we really need this piece of software?
Right.
Is this something essential to the business? So you need to be essential. You need to kind of tick that box and say, no, this is cool. Yeah. So that's the first thing you have to pass. And then still it's like, we're paying these guys a lot of money. Like we look at that. Right.
The number looks big.
Yes, but the number still looks big, right? So, so those conversations are happening a lot. The people, customers will be like, and this is across SaaS, kind of going, hey, we love your products. You're doing a great thing. But we need you today. We need to do something here. You need to work with me here. And they're the type of conversations that were not happening 4 or 5 years ago, right? And they're the type of conversations that are happening right across SaaS, and because every company is under pressure, no more right. So in e-commerce, where again margins are, you know, are tight, right? And other macro things can impact them, right? So it's like, yeah, you know, so it's a challenging environment, but one, right? And this is what we're okay, obviously I'm biased towards eDesk, of course, but you know, the beautiful thing at the moment in terms of being in software, like there's never been a more exciting time to be working in software with AI.
Right. And yes. So
pace of change is, you know, that brings its own pressure and you know,
right,
everyone's running really, really fast. But it's also the opportunity, the ability to create and do things and prototype and, you know, all these different opportunities are being unlocked, and it's a great time to be, you know, be creative and try new things and try new ideas. And you said earlier on, like gold rush or the bubble or the hype. I know.
What is it?
Yeah. What is it? Right. But as a techie still at heart, it's
right. It's pretty cool and it's useful.
Yes.
I mean, there is no doubt about it, because you can say, what would I have to do in previous years of my life to do what I'm doing now? And I'm just chatting with someone, and it's like calling the most knowledgeable friend you've ever had, and hopefully they'll answer your call, or like hiring someone, or spending hours and hours and hours taking courses, trying to learn whatever topic it is. I mean, it's the utility is just unbelievable. Assuming you could trust it.
Well, yes, yeah, exactly, right? I mean, it's still the case. I think we're all the same, you know, just you still, and that's where the nuance and everything comes in. But I think there's not anyone I would speak to or come across that is not using it in some way at the moment. And as I said, it's not just a fad or a gimmick, or, you know, they're getting value out of it, right? So this is not a, and it's just becoming more and more ingrained in their lives, not just business life, right? In terms of their lives, full stop, in terms of how they organize and operate and how they think. And as you say, how you learn, all of these things are like you know, and again, the pace is relentless, right? In terms of it doesn't stop. But yeah, it's still, as you say, right? It also, it's exciting because you get a chance to be able to do things or explore things or learn about things at an ability that it just wasn't there before, you know? And that's pretty amazing, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, in the last couple of years, as the conversations get harder, it definitely feels like there's pressure to just trade on price, meaning like if our price is just a little bit lower, we wouldn't be having these conversations versus pushing back, really developing, digging in harder, developing materials to prove the value, show the value. How do you navigate? I mean, we talk with a lot of brands in our own consulting work, which is like, you can trade on one of two things. You can trade on price, you can trade on trust. Yes. And if you're trading on price, there's no price too low that the buyer will not ask for. But if you're trading on trust, then you're in a much better position. If you even if you have to give up small discounts, you're working from a much better position of strength. Can you talk about that a little bit? How do you think about that internally? Is it something you think about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we said it there. Trust is it's still the number one human element in any business, right? At the end of the day, like obviously AI technology, but we're still humans buying off humans, right? Like that is the kind of reality, right?
So far,
yeah. Maybe in a few minutes, right? But the trust element is still a massive thing, right? And I think there, what I think a little bit about it in our business, but also I think this applies in any of our customers who would all be e-commerce customers, consistency. So what do I mean by that? Like, you have to be consistent in terms of how you operate. Okay, that's how I won't go too deep here, but that's how I build up trust with any person, right? It's like that person is consistent. If you want to really go back to prehistoric, that's how it was. Like, you would judge physics and go, okay, I'm feeling safe, and we're still kind of wired the same way, right? So it's about consistent behavior, right? So how we treat our customers, if I think about our business, you know, in terms of we're consistent how we treat them, we're consistent in terms of how we speak to them, we're consistent in terms of price, you know. So and we're transparent, right? So we're transparent in terms of how we price things, and we always try and find a balance between fair, but that's fair on two sides, fair to us and fair to our customers.
Yeah.
But that does work. And over time, you build up that trust. And, you know, a lot of our growth now would come from word of mouth from our existing customers, right? Like, so why does that happen? It's because they get asked and go, yeah, no, eDesk is, they're a good company, right? You know, we trust them, right? People will say that, right? So very similar on, as I said, in your space and in terms of e-commerce and your consultancy, like, yeah, you can race to the bottom on price, but you can always get beaten on price. Always.
Right.
So how are you gonna drive? And it is, you know, it is that word of mouth, it is that repeat business. Like we often think about, we all do, right? We think about online reviews, right? Which is obviously a massive thing, and it's part of what we do.
Right.
So you know, if you have a customer who has a positive experience, you kind of encourage them to leave a positive review, that builds up more trust. Right, in terms of your digital footprint, right? But there's still the offline conversations that person will have with family, friends, you know, neighbors, work colleagues, right? That offline element still happens, right? Whatever they leave you, a positive or negative review, which you can see, right? You know, certain people will leave negative reviews online, certain people won't, but that still speaks to a lot of people, right? So that still happens. I know, you know, e-commerce is a global scale, and obviously, but that's still a thing, right? So that trust is hard earned, and you know, has to be won. But
yeah,
you know, if you can do it, you can create that kind of flywheel effect where you have, really driving that repeat business. You know, it's really what you want to be doing. So
yeah, I mean, I would love to like use this trust discussion to talk about the new channels that we're seeing. Before the show, we were talking a little bit about TikTok Shop and how consumers see that as a way to gain trust of brands, and brands see it as a way to relate and ensure customers feel empathy for them. You talk about how brands are using trust to compete now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, we've seen across our own data set, the biggest growth channel that we see across our customers is this year and the last, probably the last 12 months is TikTok Shop. And even this year, I encountered some brands in the UK who kind of went from nothing to you know, within 12 months exploded. A lot of that was built in terms of that trust that was built up through TikTok, right? So that's through content and engagement and being consistent in terms of the messaging and how they engage and how they speak to people, right? And I think that's what I've seen massively in terms of this year, is that ability to be again, consistent, that word, right, in terms of how you engage with your audience, right? So obviously these brands are new brands, so they've kind of blown up on TikTok. But then you have existing brands who are trying to understand how do we get in there? How do we operate in there? And how, and I think the key thing from what I see is again, what people expect in those channels, especially if you're talking, sometimes reluctant, say Gen Z and all that type of stuff. But there is a younger cohort who engage on these channels like they would engage on any other channel. Like, they expect you to be honest and truthful, and also engage at any, like, they're on their phones, their evening times, weekends. Mm-hmm. That's all blurred now, right, in terms of when they pick up a conversation with you as a brand. So I think you need to show up there, and you need to be transparent on how to who you are as a brand. That, I think that's really, really important. Because I think if you try and, I don't know, fake it, or, you know, you get seen through pretty quickly. And then you also have to make sure that's consistently be done across, across you're interacting with, like, where consumers interact now, even before they purchase off you, is so much more varied, right? You know, and they're looking for those little trust signals as they engage with you. You know, they might come across your TikTok feed and go, that's kind of interesting. And then they might, you know, they might bounce to your website, or, you know, they might engage you a little bit with your chat, or, you know, they might pick up with some of your other social media presence. And, you know, there's all these little signals that they're engaging with you before you even know, right, that potentially they're coming to buy off you, you know. And I think of all these signals, right, that are in these conversations that are happening. And that's, all those signals are, they're telling you stuff about your business. It's you know.
Yeah, this is a great topic, because I think there are a lot of lessons for brands in here that maybe the top brands understand, but maybe the massive brands don't fully understand, using these conversations and the signals that come from them to run a better business. Like, what are the ingredients to doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think because there's so much richness in that data, right? In terms of when conversations are flowing, and conversations obviously can flow lots of different places. Like, they're emailing you, or they're coming in on your social channels, or they're coming through chat, or all these different places where these conversations are happening.
Because I was always told that support was a cost center.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And like, that is, and still a lot of business would view that today. They go, oh, well, that's something we just have to do. Right.
Right.
But when you start looking at some of that data, you start to pick up on, again, you know, in terms of what we do in our platform, all of a sudden you start to see sentiment about your products that you might not see anywhere else, right? Because there's reviews being left. So you might have a top selling SKU that is doing, like, if you look at numbers wise, it's doing very, very well. But there might be sentiment about that SKU or product that actually over time is going to damage you as a brand, right? So it's picking up on those signals. It's looking in that data. It's looking at data that would indicate what products are starting to take off, what customers are happy about, what's driving some repeat business. So obviously you can start using that data to harness your growth, right? You can start driving your messaging and how you drive certain behaviors in your business. And that can start to really accelerate some of your growth. Like, we've seen that, again, in our product, what we would classify as pre-sales, which are questions before someone purchases. And again, the data is pretty clear. If you jump on those, if you answer those questions quickly and accurately, right, as in, you know, properly, you would drive up your conversion, right? That we've seen the before and after within our product, and that's pretty So that's just one use case, right? But you just there's such a rich layer of data there that you can start to tap into that can drive it can drive business, but also can drive some of your strategy in terms of what mm-hmm. you should not be doing, which is kind of really interesting to start to see play out.
I think it's fascinating. I think it gives us a preview for what's coming because the signals, we're going to get some of those signals and then we're not going to get some of those signals because some of those signals will move into the public LLMs with agentic commerce. I mean, they're going to give some stuff back to us, but we're never going to get the full picture. Yet we still have to play there. It's almost like Amazon in some sense where you can't not be there. If you think about agentic commerce, like what do you think are the real things that brands should grab onto versus what's the hype? If you had to like make two lists.
I think it comes back to a little bit, like the trust thing is a math. So think of agentic, right? You have your Rick Watson agentic agent who looks after certain purchases for you. Not everything, right? Because there's still things that you associate with yourself in terms of, you know, and you're like, no, that's, there are things I enjoy. And so that could be a hobby. It could be, you know, to certain things that I think we will still enjoy us being as humans, will still go, I'm going to do my research. I want to, but there's other more transactional elements, right? In terms of I don't know, razor blades or, you know, there's other things which are, you know, commodities and stuff, right? So you will give, you know, there'll be certain parameters that you would give to your agent saying, look, it should be, you know, you might have certain parameters that you as a human being, you're like, I want it to be, you know, ethically sourced. And I don't, you know, there might be certain things that you give right, to your agent say, look, this is me. This is the fingerprint of me, Rick Watson, or the fingerprint of me, Gareth Cummings, right? And this is how I like to operate. So the agent knows about that. And when it's interacting with, you know, the agents on the brand side, right? What is it going to? It will need data points, right, to be able to verify if you I as an agent will buy off you. So that those data points are things like, which I talk about when you come back to trust. It is stuff like reviews. It is stuff about your online reputation. It is they're the types of things. It is about consistency of your brand, right? Like, you know, if there's again, I mean, one little extreme example, not that extreme. Like if you've been associated with something that is, you know, perceived as you know, non-ethical or things which are not great in terms of how your brand is represented. Again, if those things are on a kind of digital footprint somewhere, they're the types of things that could damage your reputation as a brand, and they're the types of things that agents will determine. Again, similar when it comes to, you know, quite often on some of these things, it will be based in terms of just your review score. But like, but anybody below 4.2 or whatever, actually, I just don't even bother purchasing off them because I don't want the hassle, right? So I think about it in terms of how we as humans will automate some of the things we want and we'll give certain parameters. But on the brand side, that's where you need to be thinking about how that data is.
Yeah.
How you're constructing that data now and how you're making sure you're surfacing that data back out so you can connect with that, you know? So there are things I think a little bit about in terms of those things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a fascinating discussion, Gareth. Certainly, if there's one thing we know, that in a year, we have no idea what is going to be coming out new there. So in the meantime, is there sort of like one last word that you would leave with folks in the audience about eDesk or about what they should be thinking about?
Yeah, I think, as you said, right, a year from now, like, if you look at the last year, things have changed so much. I think the pace is just going to increase. It's not going to lessen. And I think for me, it's just embrace that a little bit, run with it, and where you can enjoy it because it's you know, that's part of the journey as well, right? For the next while.
Embrace and enjoy. Wise words, I think, from Gareth Cummings, the CEO of eDesk. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Watson Weekly.
That's great. Thanks for having me, Rick. Really enjoyed it.
All right. Appreciate it so much.